World Cup Talk. Christina here with the storylines that matter most in football today. Messi headlines the conversation again today, and not because of a goal. The biggest World Cup thread in the last 24 hours is the growing tension around player condition, workload, and the kind of physical risk that can change a tournament before the knockout rounds even arrive. One of the most discussed stories is the fallout from the brutal challenge that left Canada's Ismaël Koné with a serious injury and the disciplinary response that followed. On paper, a 5-match ban sounds like a clean piece of justice. In reality, it has reopened a bigger football question. When the World Cup becomes faster, hotter, and more compressed, are federations and FIFA really keeping up with player protection, or are they mostly reacting after the damage is already done? What makes that story worth leading with is that it is not only about one player and one punishment. It reflects the mood around this World Cup cycle. Teams are trying to train at full intensity while also protecting legs that have already gone through long club seasons, extra travel, and summer heat. Coaches want sharpness. Medical staffs want caution. Fans want stars on the field, not in recovery updates. Every injury story right now lands harder because the tournament is close enough for every setback to feel decisive and every training ground rumor to feel like a warning sign. Canada in particular sits in a complicated place inside this conversation. The team has spent the last few years building belief that it can be more than a plucky co-host or a nice underdog story. But injuries and disciplinary fallout can knock a rising side off its timeline very quickly. A squad does not just lose talent in these moments. It loses flexibility, rotation options, and emotional control. If there is one lesson for listeners today, it is that World Cup momentum is fragile. It can be built over months and damaged in one challenge. Another thread getting real traction is the steady stream of team-by-team World Cup pages, previews, and squad snapshots now appearing from official and semi-official sources. On the surface, those pieces can look dry. But they tell us something important. The information environment around the tournament is tightening. Germany, the Netherlands, and other major teams are now being framed through a very specific lens. Not just who is talented, but who is healthy, who is trusted, and who fits the tactical identity a coach wants in a short competition. Germany is one of the most interesting examples. Every Germany discussion before a World Cup eventually turns into a conversation about whether the team is truly back or just carrying the memory of being Germany. That sounds harsh, but it matters. This is a national side that still carries heavyweight expectations, but the modern tournament punishes reputation very quickly. What matters now is structure, role clarity, and whether the team can create enough attacking quality without losing control in transition. The reason Germany remains such a compelling podcast topic is that the floor and ceiling still feel far apart. You can imagine a quarterfinal run, and you can also imagine another stop-start campaign where the football feels more tense than free. The Netherlands are in a different but equally fascinating place. The Dutch usually arrive with style, ideas, and a certain confidence that they can shape matches rather than just survive them. But that identity comes with pressure. In tournament football, purity of style is never enough. You need enough adaptability to handle ugly moments, late defensive phases, and the emotional swings of a month-long event. The Netherlands' story right now is less about one dramatic headline and more about the recurring World Cup question they always carry. Can a side with real football culture and technical confidence also be ruthless enough when the margins get tight? A separate angle worth discussing today is the host country and fan experience conversation, because this is one of those topics that matters deeply, even when it is not the loudest headline. Ticketing pressure, travel costs, and the practical reality of moving fans across host regions are becoming a bigger part of the World Cup story. That is especially true with a tournament spread across multiple countries and vast distances. The World Cup is supposed to be the most accessible global football festival, but every update that touches transport, accommodation, pricing, or matchday movement raises the same concern. Accessible for whom? This is where the tournament's commercial ambition meets its emotional promise. FIFA can sell scale, spectacle, and global reach, and broadcasters will love the images. But supporters experience tournaments through queues, budgets, airport connections, hotel rates, and whether they can actually turn a ticket into a manageable day. If fans start feeling that the event is becoming easier to consume on a screen than to attend in person, that is not just a logistics issue. It changes the culture of the competition. It can shift atmosphere, local presence, and who gets to feel part of the World Cup in a direct way. There is also an undercurrent of caution around scams, unofficial sales activity, and opportunistic commercialization whenever tournament demand ramps up. This happens around every major event, but the size of this World Cup makes the risk larger. The reason I think it deserves airtime is simple. Fans do not enter the tournament only as supporters, they enter it as consumers navigating a crowded and sometimes confusing market. That affects trust. And trust matters a lot in the build-up period, because once supporters begin to suspect that every deal, package, or resale listing might be a trap, excitement turns into hesitation. Then there is the weather and conditions piece, which should stay on everyone's radar even on quieter news days. Heat is not a side note in modern football anymore. It shapes training schedules, substitution patterns, recovery plans, and tempo. Coaches may talk publicly about mentality and adaptability, but privately every staff is modeling the same thing. What happens to our game if the environment takes 10% off our pressing, our sprint numbers, or our concentration late in halves? Listeners should keep watching this because climate and scheduling will not be a one-day story. They could become one of the invisible themes that explains why some favorites look flatter than expected. And that brings me to the broader trend of the day. The World Cup conversation is no longer just about stars and predictions. It is about systems under stress. Medical systems, travel systems, ticketing systems, tactical systems, and even emotional systems inside squads. The most successful teams are not necessarily the ones with the biggest names. They may be the ones that absorb chaos best. The teams that stay calm when a player is carrying a knock, when a city is running hot, when a trip is longer than ideal, or when a match becomes less beautiful and more survival-based. For fans, that actually makes this tournament more interesting, not less. It means the World Cup is still football's most dramatic test because it asks for more than talent. It asks for resilience, planning, and the ability to adapt before panic sets in. So if you are looking for the real takeaway from today's news cycle, it is this. The stories that look separate right now, injuries, squad shaping, host logistics, fan costs, scams, weather, are all connected. They are all pressure points. And the countries that manage those pressure points best will give themselves the clearest road to a deep run. That is the conversation I would carry into the next 24 hours. Watch the injury bulletins, watch the training clues, watch the fan information updates, and pay attention to how officials talk about safety and logistics. Those details often tell you more about the direction of a World Cup than 100 generic hype pieces ever could. See you tomorrow.